Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 155. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me once again is direct from the Northern Lights, John Nicholson. John, how you doing, buddy?
I see you're loving my Zoom background. So
I do, man.
I'm doing all right. I'm feeling watched, though.
Watched.
I've got this experimental, crazy camera that I'm trying to configure right now. It's supposed to have some type of AI ML face and tracking recognition. I think I might have misread the specs when I bought it on AliExpress, but...
Is this your wife's John cam so she knows what you're doing while you're at work?
I mean, if she really wants to see me staring at my monitor all day, that's... And yakking at the microphone, that's fair. No, I'm just setting it up because I've got a PoE switch, but I've got a PoE kit. I need to go set it up outside. So since the weather is actually nice, I'm like, okay, I'm going to set up some new cameras and fix the gate and some outdoor work. So, you know.
Nice. Getting it done. Well, speaking of getting it done, man, we are definitely pounding through the vSphere 7 or the 7 series episodes. I think this is going to be one of the last ones. We've done quite a few. We did, let's see, VMware Cloud Foundation. We did vSphere 7 in general with Niels. You know, we did a bunch. We did the vSAN 7. And heck, you know, I think there's no better way to finish than to hit up just the core storage aspect of vSphere 7. And when we're talking about core storage, who are we gonna bring on, man? No one else.
Jason,
of course, Jason would say. Jason, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks. Glad to be back on.
First of all, Jason, you look marvelous. I love your VVols t-shirt. I like your VVols pins. You are ready to talk.
We are. I mean, come on. What better subject to talk to than VVols?
Yeah, and you also, your mic, you sound good. I mean...
Right?
Yeah, you're really stepping up your game here. I said this on Twitter last week. I was like, I feel like there's a level of audio snobbery that we're starting to influence a lot of folks to get new gear. And man, you sound good.
Well, that's good. You know, when you want to spend a few bucks and get your audio in, like you said, got to raise the game. No more of this headset stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Absolutely. Cool. All right. So, Jason, you did a blog post recently on VirtualBlocks called What's New in vSphere 7 Core Storage. And, man, you walked through quite a few of the things there. And I'd love to touch on a few of those, starting with the support for NVMe over Fabric.
Yeah, so this was a big one. This is something that VMware and a lot of our storage partners has been working on, is to get NVMe over Fabrics functioning, right? We've seen a lot of the drive, everything's going towards NVMe, right? Faster, easier, we've got a lot more capability, and now extending that out to our external arrays.
Yeah.
And so now with the support, right, we've got either Fiber Channel or we can do RDMA, so Rocky V2. But yeah, this is really a big deal. A lot of partners have been working with us on getting this functionality enabled. And it's definitely going to really enable a lot of functionality because of its performance, low latency, high bandwidth, all kinds of neat stuff.
Well, and we've had some previous episodes that if you're new to kind of NVMe beyond like, oh, that's a faster type of SSD. I think there was a Dave Edwards episode we had.
Yeah.
I think Dr. J. Matz, we talked about NVMe over Fabrics. Encourage listeners to go back and check those out. But just as a quick refresher, you know, what are some of the benefits of NVMe beyond it's faster?
Right. Well, you know, one of the big things is that we're not running through that typical SCSI stack where we've got these smaller queuing functionality. With NVMe, we're on the PCI bus. So now we're talking several tens of queue. The queue depth is significantly higher, and all of these can be accessed simultaneously. So we're not doing serial access. So, you know, you've got this huge amount of bandwidth, and we're not doing, like I said, that serial access to get to a device.
Yeah, that single IO queue, like 32 commands for SATA, 256 for SCSI versus, what is it? It's something like 64. The spec is way beyond what the drives
64K.
Can do,
yeah. So imagine
and that number of queues and depth in parallel.
Time.
So it's, yeah, right. It's like a cubed effect.
Yeah. So the performance is inherently there. So working towards this new functionality allows for significant benefits in the environment.
Yeah, getting access to multiple queues helps you drive higher IOPS while still keeping that latency really low. This is something not everyone was always aware of, is in order to drive high throughput, you often have to queue deep, and then your seek time gets multiplied times your queue depth. And so previously, when people are like, I'm trying to push 40 gigabytes a second, I'm like, and then they complain about latency. I'm like, no, we just ignore latency when we're pushing that much throughput. This should help us kind of claw that back. Also, the CPU interrupts, I think, was a lot lower on NVMe, right?
Right, yeah, because we're already on the PCI bus. So we're not necessarily having to do more translation. It's more native. And so we get, again, it just, the inherent protocol itself is overall less latency and higher throughput.
So let's talk about those transport options. You mentioned Fibre Channel, but also RoCE V2. I remember RoCE having something to do with RDMA. And I know we already had ISER, iSCSI RDMA. What's fundamentally different there between all these different options?
So we've got FC, right? FC is not going away. It's still one of the most popular out there. It's actually the most popular out there. So anybody with an FC environment can still do this NVMe over fabrics. So that was one of the kind of obvious options. The other option was, how are we going to do this over the IP stack? And by using RDMA, we get that high throughput without having to go through the different storage stacks, right? We're going memory to memory from the two different devices. So it's RDMA over converged Ethernet.
Avoid that TCP hop, right?
Right. We're not having to go through the TCP hop, CPU, all that type. It's memory to memory. So that's the whole, remote direct memory access. That's the RDMA piece of it. And so that was the other obvious choice. Now there's a couple other, right? We've got iWarp and InfiniBand, and those are all supported, and who knows?
TCP optimized, I think was right. The phrase, where you still have TCP, but at least the latest, you're not paying a pull 80 microseconds or something, right?
And those may come into play later, but these were the two most obvious for performance, right? Is being able to do it via an IP stack and then also over FC.
Great. Now all we need is Fibre Channel over Token Ring. I know that's coming next.
FCOTR, right. Baby. It's the future.
Absolutely. Do some star topology.
Nice. So the next one I saw on there was something that I thought should have been there for a while, which is shared VMDKs.
Yeah, this is definitely something that another nail in the coffin of our RDMs, right? Nobody really likes RDMs. They're a nature of the beast, but
LUNs suck.
Yeah,
that's right. Exactly. So now what we can do is, last year we had announced SCSI 3 PR for vVols. So that was another
for
piece
VSAN,
of being able to... No, for vVols.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, 6.7, you can move your RDMs onto vVols, and yep. It's actually pretty easy. Well, now with this 7.0 release, you can do shared VMDKs supporting SCSI 3 PR on VMFS. So again, getting rid of another avenue to get off of those RDMs.
That's right. So that matches also, vSAN got that same capability in 6.7U3. So first vVols, then vSAN, now VMFS, all have full parity now across the board.
Yeah, and there are a few caveats. You do have to use EagerThick on the shared disks. You don't have to use EagerThick on the non-shared disks, but the shared disks in the WSFC do have to be EagerThick.
But that mirrors a lot of the application recommendations you were getting anyways from those, even outside of the hypervisor requirement. That was often.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, for sure. Thick and thin. That seems to still be a topic of conversation. Here we are, man. It's still something that comes up in the world of storage. You'd think we'd be over that, but you would think it would not still have to be such a big consideration, right?
Well, my New Year's resolution is to always make my disks thinner, but unfortunately, various obstacles always come in the way. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that leads us into the other feature that was released with vSphere 7 is called the Affinity 2.0 or Affinity Manager 2.0. So like you said, you've got that, well, what should I do? Is it thick? Is it thin? Oh, well, if I do thin, I've got this overhead of that first write to write out my bits.
Yep. You got to zero the block before you write it.
Exactly.
And confirm that it's a zero. I think there's a readback, isn't there? Maybe.
Yeah. So the way that works is the original Affinity Manager, when a write came in to the file system, it had to go look for what they called a resource cluster, which is an available block of space to write. And there was no map to that. So when you did that initial first write, if it didn't find a resource cluster available soon, that's where that potential overhead could come from. With the Affinity 2.0, what we've done is create a intelligent map of the entire physical cluster of all of the data resource clusters. And so what that allows is now the Affinity Manager, when the file system comes in and says, I need to do a first write, It doesn't have to go find an available resource cluster to do that first write. It knows, based on this map that it has now, where can I do that first write, what resource cluster is available, and how much space is available. So the resource manager says, yeah, no problem, you go to this one. And so that delay that you would have seen on that first write, either in zeroing out an eager thick or in thin provisioned, is now reduced because we have a map, real-time map, of where the available resource clusters are. So that thin versus thick argument kind of goes away now, because now that overhead is greatly reduced.
Well, and that used to be one of the original arguments for, you know, everyone would say always eager zero thick, assuming you have VAI to do the write same primate, where it would go.
Yep.
You would send one command to the array and say, make all this zeros. And then it would lie to you and say, yes, I'm done, while it secretly on the back end did whatever it did or ignored the command. Effectively, you know, if it was a thin volume. So providing that same capability without the need to, you know, do a bunch of other, you know, things there, that's pretty handy, because that helps us be able to reclaim at the guest level. Because if we did eager zero thick, we couldn't do thin reclaim. We couldn't do unmap and trim commands from the guests and re-thin VMDKs. And so that's actually been some pressure. Is everyone, I think some people, you know, pretty much had tattoos that said eager zero thick for life. And then suddenly unmap came along. We're like, crap, we need that. I want that space back. The only way to get it back is to use a thin VMDK. But then the thin VMDK came with these performance caveats. Yeah. And I also, you know, we talk about these business critical apps that sometimes would require thick. And a lot of it goes back to that right there. And they would, you know, you talk to some of the Oracle DBAs.
Oh, yeah,
and even
absolutely.
It was zero all the blocks out beforehand. Oh, yeah. Was just, that's the first thing you do. You pour your coffee, you know, you go issue a bunch of random zeros to the bits to go allocate the blocks. And then you go make breakfast. Then you come back 15 minutes later. Then you go write your database. Mm-hmm. So,
right. And the thing is, when you think about some of the flash arrays, they're like, yeah, whatever. I don't care if you tell me it's eager thick. I'm not going to go waste a bunch of zeros.
Yeah.
So they don't even write it. They just acknowledge that they did. And so the bits haven't been written anyway.
Yeah, vSAN has a special case for zeros. That's been a common thing for a while, is zero detection of like, oh, you're writing a zero. I will update my map and
exactly.
Not go write a zero. So,
Affinity 2.
Now this is a lot more efficient in that process. And like you said, one of the big ones is the reclaim. So now you can do the thin provisioned and use unmap or trim to get your space back. You know, we did, John, you and I did that presentation VMworld, and we really talked about that. What was the analogy? A Lay's
get your petabytes back, get your petabytes back.
Yeah. There's get your petabytes back, America, was the great tagline of that. But the other one also is, you know, do you really want to buy a bag of potato chips with more air in it? And that's what a lot of these inefficient systems were, or, you know, reservations were.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, I would like. Okay, I get that you need a little bit of air there for transport so you don't, you know, crumble all the chips. But it was getting to a point of ridiculous how much space is getting wasted there. And talking to several of the array vendors and others in the industry who've been around a while, the general consensus is there's about 20-30% of your space that not just regular thin provisioning, not dedupe isn't going to get you. It's only unmap is going to get you back. So that's a huge win on your storage bill.
I agree.
Unless you just have unlimited money for storage, you know, and well, you know, go to hell. So
Affinity 2, is this something that is enabled? Is this something that is just, you know, just part of vSphere 7? How does that work?
Right. So it's just automatically enabled. It's just part of vSphere 7. It's the change is the new Affinity Manager is now 2.0 with these enhanced functionality. So you may, if you're really running, maybe if you've got some old spinning media, you'd probably see a difference. With an all flash, you're not going to see a difference.
But are there nerd knobs? Am I configuring things in this, or is it just happens?
Nothing to configure.
Okay.
This is all just a management. And, you know, if you go in and take a look at this blog, I pointed over to an article I wrote on Storage Hub that really kind of shows the map and what the difference is if you really want to dive into the details of exactly how this works. It is pretty elaborate in how it works compared to the original.
Yeah.
Well, not having to burn stuff in beforehand and being able to take advantage of thin, it makes a lot of sense. So.
Absolutely, it does.
Well, speaking of vVols, we actually had Cato Grace on a couple of weeks ago talking about SRM and the support for vVols within vSphere 7. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, so there wasn't any actual vVols enhancements, but what really happened with the vSphere 7 release was a lot of interoperability. And that was really showing for those that think that vVols is no longer viable or it's going away. This is clearly showing
the
that
rumor
it is not
of vVols
going anywhere. I love it when I hear that. Oh, nobody's using vVols, and actually, we're seeing, you know, easy double-digit growth all across the board. It's pretty incredible.
Consistently, the only people I've said that who keep saying that vVols isn't a thing are people who have not invested. They're storage vendors who did not invest properly in vVols.
That's right.
And they're losing deals over it. But I have seen the SRM support's a big deal. I've got a old buddy of mine here in Houston who he's got, I think, 2 or 3 petabytes under his command on arrays that are vVols ready. And he loves it. And he's all into automating his storage. And then he's like, oh, I got to be able to replicate this. And that was a big bottleneck. And so I think we're going to see. I mean, there's already a lot of adoption and growth in vVols too, but in some of the larger shops who had very, strict, they needed SRM to manage their DR.
Yep.
That's gonna unlock a lot of options there.
Yeah, there was actually quite a few customers, a lot in Europe that said they wouldn't even look at vVols until SRM supported it.
Oh yeah.
So now that was a big development. You know, when we announced that last year, that really showed the continued development of vVols and the support of it. And then again, seeing all this interoperability, SRM was one of the big ones. You know, a lot of customers have been waiting for that. The other one that was a big popular ad was operations, vRealize operations, vROps. So, customers would go in, say, why can't I see my vVols data store? Isn't it just a regular data store?
Yeah.
And on the vSphere side, that's exactly what it looks like. And now, again, that's another interop that's been added is you can, with vROps 8.1, you can see and manage and do your capacity planning in vROps.
So we can deploy them easier, we can protect them, and now we can manage them. So
that's right. Yeah, but they're going away, right? It's not supported anymore. nobody's really doing vVols.
Yeah. Well, I think John already said this, but my experience has always been the folks that say that are usually motivated by the fact that they probably have a VASA provider that's on like 1.0, and they really don't have any functionality to bring to the table other than just basic support. So it's not a big use case for them. As we've seen, there were certain inhibitors, right? Like support for array-based replication, support for site recovery manager. Once these things get out of the way, then we start to see the growth. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it just really shows that this is, and that is the direction, right? When we start looking at the overall arching direction of where VMware is going, you can't do tag-based at its scale. And that kind of leads us to the next one when we talk about CNS. So we've got vVol support for CNS. And so when you start thinking
about— And to clarify CNS, we mean cloud native storage. And so that's the container volumes coming from the CSI for the Kubernetes DevOps hipsters, right?
Right. So supporting a first-class disk, right, which is a disk within vSphere that doesn't have a VM associated with it. Well, remember, a vVol is its own entity. So what perfect match is that a vVol that's already its own entity is now a first-class disk? So absolutely perfect for persistent volumes. And then talking about that scale piece, you can now map the CSI driver to the SPBM policy, or the CSI, the storage class, excuse me. So we've got the storage class that maps to a storage policy. And so that is very easily manageable at scale.
Well, like this has come a long ways from the days of the old Project Hatchway, where you kind of were just giving the ability to write individual SPBM like sub feature flags all the way to the developer. It was kind of a wild west of like, you could have some devs gone wild when you let them control the RAID or things like that, versus this is much more the VMware admins in control. They've got visibility. They are the ones who present the SPBM policies and make them, accessible. There's a lot more, as well as all the dashboards. I can see the performance. I can see the policy compliance on those volumes. I can basically do a stack trace if the Kubernetes developer gives me their Kubernetes volume ID or the tags that they apply auto get applied to the back. Like it's just this is container storage for grownups is what it feels like.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
The thing I really like about it is that the developer can create it their own using even on with vSAN file service. That can create their own file services. They can create their own file shares, and they'll show up inside of vCenter with cloud native storage. And then when they delete them, they're already, and I'm sure this works also with vVols, when they're deleted, you can see that they're deleted inside of vCenter. You don't have to go back and do any management. If a developer deletes a file inside of his environment, he doesn't need to go inside of vSphere to then do any cleanup. It's all done for you.
Yeah, the only thing worse than having developers create thousands of volumes is having them create thousands of volumes and not clean up after themselves.
Yeah,
right. Completely forget about them. And yeah, that's that perfect marriage that you mentioned, vSAN. That's the whole idea, is that with vSAN and vVols, you now have the ultimate capability with your policy-based management to manage this stuff at scale.
Yeah.
Like John said, you're not going to go back and, oh, my developer just created 100 volumes and forgot about them. You know, there's that space reclamation you're talking about.
Well, and the challenge, if you look at it from like why vVols and why vSAN are the first class citizens in this container volume world here, and why you said tags wouldn't scale, is you can only create, what, 256 LUNs per cluster? I mean, it's relatively right. low count. And so you were never going to get one RDM per container. But if you look at how vVols works, particularly on the block side where it's a sub-LUN object, you can have 10,000 of those attached to a host. vSAN, you can have 9,000 components. So that's a hell of a lot of objects per host. And so if you look at those scale points versus trying to do RDMs and pass-through volumes and stuff like that, yeah, it was, you're going to have to create like a target for every pod. And if you, and then you have no visibility. So when the developer started, you know, let's say you did that volume, you did that directly from the array and you did iSCSI into the container pod. Now when they complain about storage performance, you're like, I don't know what you're talking about because all of this is outside of my realm. And the container people move at such a speed already that, yeah, if you don't have that.
Yeah, you can't be managing LUNs, right? What is it?
LUNs suck.
That's right. You cannot do management at scale and speed that you need to with DevOps. And the only way to do that is with policy-based management.
Agreed.
Yeah. So you can tag VMFS, to be clear.
Yes.
And it will do, it's like a round-robin placement, I think, right?
Well, it depends on the implementation from the storage vendor. There are some vendors out that do have some automation for tag-based, which is pretty neat. But in general, that's not, there's only one vendor that I know of that does that. And when you're talking about the other, you could tag VMFS.
You could tag a bunch of VMFS volumes, but there's no storage vMotion. So if you start filling up a LUN, like, and this isn't a vSphere limitation, this is a Kubernetes thing. So like if you had a data store cluster, storage DRS isn't going to work. That was actually a path I went down of tracing this down. So there's just a lot of quirkiness to trying to work with VMFS and SPVM tags versus the vVols and vSAN approach.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So you can definitely see that when you're talking about scale, right?
All right. Well, the last one I wanted to talk to you about was VMware Cloud Foundation support. You know, I definitely have heard from not only from Kevin Tiber, who talked to us about VCF4, that there is now some vVol support. And I know some of the storage vendors out there like Pure and others are actually taking advantage of using VMware Cloud Foundation on their storage. And so what can you tell me about support with vVols and VMware Cloud Foundation?
So we've got two levels on that piece of it. So right now with the 4.0 release, we've announced support for what we call supplemental storage. So once the workload domain has been built, you can add vVols and it is supported. It will not impede any of the VCF functionality. And that is a vendor supported functionality. So you have to make sure that your vendor is supporting that. And a lot of you, like you said, Pure, Dell, Hitachi, a lot of these guys are all working on this. Nimble, HPE, whatever, all those guys are definitely working to get this supported with VCF 4.0 as supplemental storage. Now, the second piece is that we are actively working to get vVols supported as principal storage.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Like, because if you're going to call something cloud and talk about it being, you know, enabling your private and your hybrid cloud,
yep,
and then be like, oh yeah, and steps 1 through 40 involve manually provisioning some fiber channel LUNs and doing zoning. Like,
yeah.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Yeah.
That's absolutely right. You know, go back to that. It's, you can't be doing this stuff at scale. And that's where, again, it reiterates this whole idea of why vVols and vSAN are in this general path, right? It's not that VMFS is going away. It's not that NFS is going away. It's how do I manage this stuff when we're talking thousands of objects? You can't go provision thousands of RDMs. That's not even reasonable.
Yeah.
You have to be able to manage this at scale, right? We're talking, I mean, John, you brought that up. DevOps, some guy's going to go create a couple of hundred maybe in an afternoon. You're going to go clean that up manually? Oh, you're going to have to go rewrite a bunch of scripting or some type of tool to manage that.
I'm going to write this in Perl. You know.
Yeah.
That way, even I won't remember how it works an hour from now.
Perfect.
I also like that point you made that like VMFS is not going away. NFS is not going away. SCSI is not going away. Like they're going to be like, you know, Windows XP and the cockroaches. Like they will, all of these technologies will, for one reason or another, outlive, you know, the atomic war, World War VII or something.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, SCSI is a single queue. It's only so deep, like, you know, there's limitations, you know. I Scuzzy will be around for a long time, but it's not the future of anyone. And there's not going to be heavy investments in these things.
Right.
NFS V3 is, I think, as old as I am. And NFS V4 does a couple of things, but there's not any fundamental, like, massive, you know, the gains that are going to be coming from things like NVMe over fabrics and other transport, or the gains you get from vVols versus VMFS, you're going to see a natural move there. Although storage people are naturally cautious and easily spooked and distracted by shiny things, or not distracted by shiny things, but, you know, hide in their caves. So it'll be a slow migration for all of these things, but it sounds like the benefits are there for that cloud-like agility.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's definitely, you can see the direction. And we are actually, you mentioned NVMe and NVMe and vVols. That is something that is being worked to get to that point. And again, it goes back to that agility and speed and enabling it with vVols and NVMe. So
we'll
see that soon.
Yeah, adding NVMe to vVols, it makes sense. And what I think some people get lost on vVols is vVols is not a transport mechanism. It is not SCSI. It is not NVMe. Nope. I've met some people, they're like, vVols is too new. We want to stick with iSCSI. I'm like, you can do vVols with iSCSI, man. It's a control channel. It's a control path. It's not a data IO path. And
And it's, again, it's also not, the vVols architecture itself is not a proprietary function by VMware. That's a SCSI T10 standard. The policy management is the VMware specific
VASA,
aspect of it.
Which VASA is actually pretty old, to be honest. I mean, it technically predates vSAN and vVols. I used it with...
Yeah, it actually stands for vSphere APIs for Storage Awareness, which didn't do things. It just reported on it initially. I'm surprised I never changed...
Yeah, it was a one-way information. It would say, hey, this LUN, by the way, is RAID 5 and is replicated. All vVols and vSAN do from that differently from the old VASA, which... I don't know, probably dates back to 5.0 or 4.1 or something, sends a ability to send have an imperative-based model, or I'm sorry, not imperative, a declarative-based model of, say, build this or sustain this, as well as also send a control channel to go substantiate that LUN or sub-LUN or NFS object.
Yeah, having the bidirectional is really the big piece. The array is aware of what's going on, and so is vSphere.
I love it. Yeah. Hey, man. Well, you know this. I love vVols. If you ever want to come on and just literally dive deep just on vVols, you always have an open door invitation. But seems like there's a lot going on in general for just core storage for vSphere 7. I know you've written this blog on this, the What's New. I'll leave that in the show notes of the podcast. I saw a couple of other ones that you did just around, some other areas inside of vSphere 7 core storage. I'll be sure to leave all those in there. You've done some great demos. I've seen you do some light boards. You've been a pretty busy fellow for this launch.
Yeah, there's definitely been a lot. We did over 20 light board videos. So yeah, we were busy in the studio there. So you can take a look at that if you want to dive into more of our partners and see what they have options for vVols and what each partner has that's unique.
And see, now you've got me looking to upgrade my home lab switches. Like, where am I going to find RDMA gear on eBay that's reasonably priced?
Find some RNICs.
Yeah, this is the challenge. So all these cool things I can't do with my, old E1000, gigabit NIC. I'm going to have to get some real hardware. So,
well, if you'd stop spending all this money on cameras and green screens and lights.
Audio gear is really the problem, Pete, because all these other people started working from home. I'm like, well, I got to stay ahead of them. Like, yeah. I've got to.
Good job, man. Well, you're doing it, man. And you look great. Jason, thank you so much for joining us. John, anything else before we let Jason go?
Viva Las Vivas, man.
I agree.
That's right.
Viva Las Vivas!
All right. Well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Jason Massey for geeking out on some core storage in vSphere 7. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
enough of this jibber jabber.